Hello and welcome to Coffee with the Coaching Revolutionaries from The Coaching Revolution, and you'll find us at thecoachingrevolution.co.uk. Welcome to episode 2.
Hi, I'm Paul Snell.
And I'm Sarah Short. Today we're going to talk about finding a hook to hang your hat on. Now, what I mean by that is that when you finish your coaching qualification and you're standing there clutching your shiny certificate and really pleased with yourself because all the work you've put in, and you know, you may have done it full time, in which case you'll be brain dead at the end of it, or you may have done it part time over a number of years in some cases, but whichever way you've done it, you will absolutely have worked your socks off to get this shiny certificate. And now you have it, what do you do next? And that really is the position that both Paul and I were in different sorts of situations, but very similar positions when we first started coaching several years ago. Paul, tell me about how you got into coaching.
Well, you know, Sarah, I remember really, really well those days. At the time, I had had a really good career in business management, and I loved it and it was great, but what it wasn't doing is ticking my box for the people thing. I loved working with people and businesses were a lot of fun, but I wanted to do more with people. And I remember sitting there thinking, how can I transition from what is a great career, high earning, you know, an opportunity to move from something that was very successful to something that inherently, of course, as a self-employed person, you come across some risks. So I sat down and I made a very, very detailed, pragmatic plan of what did I need to do to enable this transition to be both effective, timely, and to ensure that I didn't drop away from earning the capability or reaching the earning capability that I was already at.
When I first met Paul, one of the things that he said that I thought was absolutely hilarious was that he'd given up a really well-paying job to start coaching, and so coaching had to become a really well-paying job very quickly.
It's very true. It's always interesting when you start off these new businesses, and it's great, and the energy and the drive, and I was absolutely convinced I was going to make this work. But what I did do very early on was sit down and plan detail. It was something I was used to, and running small businesses, you have to know where you are and where you're going. So I'd sat down and already was thinking, right, how could I build a business that would enable me to be both successful financially, as well as address and deal with the coaching passion that I had inside of me. It was something that was driving me to this. Now, the first thing for me, and I remember sharing this with you, Sarah, was I really wanted to have some form of template or framework so that I could begin coaching. Coaching was my thing, you know, I wanted to coach. But I was very aware that what was important was to have some ability to already have material or deliverable, whatever the words are, so that I could get on with the job of coaching, which was where I wanted to be.
Absolutely. One of the things that I found when I finished my original coaching qualification, I took a coaching course in 2009, and it was quite interesting actually, because it was partly online and partly face to face, and we were a cohort of about 22. I'm saying about 22. There were 22 of us, and of the 22, 18 were there to tick boxes. And what I mean by that is that work had paid for them to go because they wanted them to have some sort of coaching capability to coach their colleagues. So 18 were ticking boxes for work, for their employer, and 4 of us were really interested in taking coaching into our own business, our own practice. And when we left, we were clutching, as previously mentioned, that shiny certificate, feeling really, really pleased with ourselves because all the work we put in and how amazing we all felt, and we all had this passion to change the world. But one of the things that we were given when we left the course, and I have to say, I've yet to see anything massively different from your UK training courses, what I was given was a book that said, this is how you get clients. It was called The Coach's Marketing something or other. And I read lots of kind of, you know, whatever was around at the time in terms of books on marketing for coaches and all of these things. But what it was saying basically is, coach somebody for free for one session and make it so wonderful that they're going to be begging to pay you. And we all believed it. And when I think about it now, I'm actually at a bit of a loss as to why we all believed it. And off we went. And out of the four of us, I was probably the most successful in terms of client acquisition. And the reason for that is that I had a lot of sales experience, and I'd worked for myself quite significantly before I took this qualification, and the others had all come from paid employment. So I was really by far the most prolific in terms of client acquisition. And I got like six clients that wanted, you know, I managed to persuade that they were going to pay me £100 a month. And even in 2009, £100 a month times six was not going to keep a single mum with two kids, bodies and souls together. And so I had to stop. And what I was missing was the understanding of how to take the shiny certificate and convert that into proper paying clients.
Yeah. Again, similar experiences, Sarah. It comes back to that the fact that we both have backgrounds in business. We leverage some of that experience. We know what we're looking for when it comes to how business works, the process. We understand what's needed. However, there was a definite gap. You know, there was these basic things like you've just described where, you know, training organizations for coaching would suggest just do a free session. If you do it so well, they'll don't worry about it because they'll pay you. They want to pay you so much for the next one. It's a given. It just doesn't work like that. And the reality to business isn't like that. It's that odd thing when you begin to move into an area of passion for you, that you're working on a new business. It's odd that sometimes your brain just doesn't click in and the pragmatic bit starts to work. You know, you start saying, hang on a second, I need to analyze here. What are we talking about? This is a business. We both have been involved in running and developing businesses before. So you start to put your mindset in place. What do I need? What's the fundamental things I need to grow a business? And then you start to consider subjects like business development as some sort of sales approach. You consider the materials you want to deliver, the workshops. Are these materials being used, particularly in the country you're in, so that there is given and great examples of success already in place?
Okay, I think you just jumped around a bit there because you were talking about you were looking for something and you will have done exactly what I did, which is sit down and think, right, I'll write it.
Mm.
And that's the thing you just missed.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Of course, I'm in this process. And when I think back the years ago when this started, there was an absolute need. If I was going to transition from a high paying employed role to self employed in my own business, there had to be something there. There had to be something, some tangible thing there. And it was a case of, I didn't want to spend 2 years writing material. As much as I love material, as much as I love the concepts, that as a business proposition meant that it was going to be very difficult on a cash flow. So yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and so therefore we both ended up in the situation where you start casting around and saying, well, what's out there? What's already written? And what's already written that has a proven track record? Now, the one thing that we both know is that as UK-based coaches, that question shouldn't be what's already written with a track record, but what's already written with a UK-based
yes.
track record. Because coaching and acquiring coaching clients in the UK is hugely different from coaching and acquiring coaching clients elsewhere. The approach that coaches need to take to engage clients in America, in Canada, in the Antipodean countries is very different than the approach that we need to take here. We're just a bit too British for all of that kind of shouty American stuff. And I mean that with all the love in the world. I've got close friends who are American. But they are a completely different kettle of fish to us when it comes to how we like to buy.
Yeah, and I would go one step further. You know, what you're describing there is that is a cultural shift. You know, we even in business, in the processes of business, we differ greatly from our friends across the Atlantic, or actually from most countries. We have very different approaches to business. It is very effective in the UK. So why wouldn't we want material that is both culturally relevant and relevant in a business process manner? So when we're delivering this material, it's addressable in a very tangible way, not just... I remember a coaching friend of mine would argue that he would get the material from the US and it would talk about the sidewalk. Now, that sounds ridiculously simple and, of course, not really overly relevant. But culturally, people go, actually, it's not a sidewalk, it's a pavement. And as ridiculous as it is, people start to think differently about what you're asking them to do.
Well, there's that kind of, oh, it's American material. And you can see it on the faces of the people you're delivering it to, can't you? Yeah. When they come across a reference that is quite clearly not our culture. Now, you know, unless you're buying copyrighted stuff that you absolutely mustn't do this with, you could retype it and put in UK-based references. But then we're back to, if you're going to do that, you might as well have written the material, basically.
Yeah, and so we come full circle. We're back to that point that says, really, this material, this deliverable in a coaching context needs to be relevant, particularly to the UK, because that's where we're based. And our experience has shown, and both Sarah and I have had material that has not been written in the UK, that has not been particularly relevant, and ends up being quite a struggle to deliver, particularly when you've worked so hard to win the business in the first place.
Absolutely. Absolutely, but kind of that's almost a different podcast subject, isn't it? Because what we're talking about here is that how do you create the framework to hang your hat on to then have the foundations in place to be able to go out and get the business. Getting the business, we'll talk about later, but for now, let's talk about this framework. So I think we were probably both in the same situation when we set off, which is... what we really wanted was a mentor.
Mm.
We wanted to be able to talk to somebody who had been there, done it, worn the t-shirt, eaten the pie, you know the saying, and had done it in this country. And they were very difficult to come by. They were very difficult to come by. And we almost, well, not even almost, we ended up being the trailblazers, didn't we? So that we became the people that were mentoring others, having kind of stumbled our way across, along that path ourselves and cleared the way for others to come behind us.
Yes. Great point. You know, this, the idea that, and it's, I guess... I could even argue I was a little bit foolhardy when I started this to think that how straightforward this would be. And actually, having gone through the process time and time again, I can't stress how important it is to have good people around you, particularly people that have written, delivered, developed material that is relevant. It's that classic example, isn't it? We can either become textbook learners. And I'm, please understand, I'm not belittling the textbooks out there. There's some great material out there. Or we can become people that learn from others as well as material. So you wrap a whole context around this material that's far more relevant, and it's delivered because people have already been there. As you say, sir, we sort of end up trailblazing this a wee bit, but it's such a relevant point. You know, when you've won this business with clients, you need to be able to deliver relevant material in a relevant way.
Okay. And back to the part about the mentoring. What we were looking for back then was somebody who could say to us, this is what you need to do to win coaching business. Now, roll on to 2018, And the world is full, especially when the world is social media. It is full of online gurus who say, oh, all you've got to do is this one thing. Just click here to subscribe to my, webinar, download my PDF, come and watch my video. I made £9 million, or was it dollars, I saw the other day, from this one webinar. It's like, no, you didn't. Not profit, you didn't. And if it was turnover, how much were you paying on advertising? Just like this one I'm clicking on to get that click. And I was breaking my heart as a coach, I had a burning desire to help people and I just couldn't make it work. And then I discovered this one thing that was going to make the difference between destitution and clients who wanted to throw hundreds of thousands of pounds a time at me. And it makes me furious, because if it had been around back then, I would almost certainly have clicked them all.
Yeah.
Because you get to the stage where you say, I just want some help from someone who's done it and been there, and I want partly them to coach me, but actually I want them to say to me, you need to do this. Because I can do that, but I need to know what the this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, this is an absolute killer for me. If there's anything about coaching and the coaching industry, and particularly, and I'm going to use quite a strong phrase here, the snake oil salespeople out there, this idea that you just need to do the one thing, it's a major, major passion for me, this. I can't agree more. It is so easy when you're in a position where you've given up employment and you're ready to go and someone says, don't worry, just do this one thing. You know the old adage, if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is. And that's relevant now. Social media gives people, and we're talking ethics here, really and truthfully, it gives people the opportunity to abuse. And again, I'm not apologizing for the strong words here, because it is abuse of someone who is determined to be successful at what they do, that loves what they do. And here we go. It's just do this one thing. And of course, if it was that simple, wouldn't we all be doing it?
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, it's not just people who've walked out of their job and gone, right, okay, here I am on a Monday morning, sitting at my desk with my shiny pencils and, you know, everything organised neatly. It's not just them. It's when you go a bit further down that line and you've used up the savings that you put aside, and you've had, you've tried endless things to create leads or to generate leads, to you've had conversations with people, perhaps you've maybe gone to a networking event and found you were the 11th coach in the room and the last one on the introductions, and you stand there and go, I do what they do, because you can't think of anything else to say. When you're at the stage where actually you either make this work or you go back to work for somebody else, that's when those just one thing merchants suddenly seem more appealing, I think. And it makes... I'll tell you how neurotic I've got about this, Paul. I've started to screenshot them on my phone when I see them, and I must have 40.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to name them and shame them and think, oh, okay, it's their business model. But I know from experience of talking to coaches who have burnt through dozens of these things, and sometimes it'll be, oh, you know, watch this free thing, let me sell you that, let me sell you this, let me sell you the other. Sometimes they've spent more money, sometimes they haven't, but it's never worked out the way they wanted it to. Ethics, you've touched upon ethics, it absolutely comes into it. It's not fair to let people believe that if they just do this one thing, that all of a sudden this coaching business that they've worked so hard at and not had the results they've been looking for could be fixed if only they knew this one thing. Because it's not true.
It is not. And this ethics thing is significant. And I'm being quite serious for a minute here. We see it day in, day out. And we love to see coaches succeed. We know what it takes, right? We're doing this every day. We know what it takes. And we also know that it takes work. It's like I've just said, if it were that easy, we'd all be doing it. And everyone would be a millionaire. It's not about that. What I think this industry needs, right? Let's get down to brass tacks here. It's the reason we're called the Coaching Revolution. It's time for a revolution. It's time to see an ethical concise, productive and fair approach to allowing coaches and new coaches to develop their business. That's what this is about. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And to touch on ethics, there are organisations out there who will take fantastic sums of money from you with the promise of, you know, material, maybe some sort of marketing system, maybe logos you can use and all of that stuff. And their success rates are less than 3%.
Yeah.
You know, we know of more than one organisation of that ilk, don't we? Be very careful. Just because a company tells you they're ethical doesn't mean they are.
Yes. Again, to coin a phrase, words can be cheap. You know, what you're looking for, certainly in hindsight, and when I look back at my coaching career, I really want to be sure that people are looking for an approach that shows you consistent results, that's relevant to the market you're in. You know, ethics are a big part of learning to trust, and trust has significant elements of understanding behaviour and integrity and intent. So this is a big one, Sarah. You know, I'm not apologising for keeping on about this. I really am tired. I'm actually tired now of seeing coaches, new coaches, lose their opportunity to have a successful career in coaching. There's some amazing coaches that are put under unnecessary pressure.
Yeah, I've known some really, really good coaches just walk away because they couldn't make it work and talk wistfully of the year that they spent trying to make it work. One of the things, to jump back to what we were talking about material, one of the things about material is not just, you know, has it been delivered successfully in your country, in our country, in the UK, in your culture? It needs to have been written by somebody with more experience, but preferably by coaches.
Yeah.
You know, coaches have a different outlook to academics. They have a different outlook to teachers. They have a different outlook to business consultants who write material. If you're going to be taking coaching into organisations, you want coaching materials that have been written by successful coaches and have been delivered in your own country. And obviously, we're talking to UK-based coaches. To be fair, UK and Northern Europe coaches. But that's what you're looking for. Coaching material written by coaches, delivered by coaches in your own country. That's the kind of holy grail, if you will, of coaching material. Coaches who have been successful. So these organisations that we say we know that they have tiny percentages of success rates. There's one thing that the people who are successful have in common. And I think if this was known more widely and kind of talked about more widely, then you can make the skill set that it is that they have in common more widely available. Because the thing about skills is they are not innate. A skill is a learnt thing. And if I can learn it, if you can learn it, somebody else can learn it. But what these people who are successful have in common is that they usually have a chunk of self-employment in their background. Now, I know you say you came from paid employment into coaching, but you've run your own business lots of times over the years. I've run my own business lots of times. Never a coaching business. I've run a language school. I've run a children's drama academy in the UK and in Botswana, rather bizarrely. You didn't see that one coming, did you? So there's an element of self-employment in the background. Now, the thing about self-employment is that if you have been successfully self-employed, what that means is you have successfully gone out and found business. So you have a way of looking at the world from a business generation perspective. Now, that perspective quite often doesn't exist in the employed. And this is why Hank is such an interesting member of the Coaching Revolutionaries. Hank is our kind of, he's our quiet one. He likes to stand next to the spotlight. But Hank works, if you ask him, he worked for the agency. Now, he actually worked for the Environment Agency, but he never calls it the Environment Agency. He calls it the agency, which I think is really, really 007-ish and far, far cooler than I suspect that the Environment Agency actually is. But Hank went from being a civil servant, basically, for many years, and he moved. He was in the learning and development section of the Environment Agency, so his background and his experience is very relevant. And this is where a lot of the people that we talk to who want to become coaches have come from. They have had perhaps a career like Hank's in learning and development or in coaching and mentoring within the workplace, and maybe they've become redundant and suddenly they've got a bit of money and an opportunity to take some time. The skill that Hank managed to pick up really quickly is how to get out there hunter-gathering. And it's an unusual skill for somebody from within the public sector or from within employment, because you don't have to get out there and kill to eat, to use that really American and nasty phrase. But you know what I mean, don't you?
I do. And also, you know, talking about Hank, I think you'll agree, Hank has a fantastic ability to learn and evolve. He's done an incredibly great job of transitioning from what in effect is civil servant employment to this self-employed successful coach. But Sarah, along the way, he has learned a lot from you. You know, let's be honest. The reason why we're quite passionate, and that's downplaying it, about mentoring in this coaching environment is there is a great opportunity to support people in this transition. Whether they're coming from a background that already has the experience of being self-employed or running your own business, so you understand business development, or not, there is the mentoring element enables you to take advantage of someone who can work with you and help you understand what this transition is. Because as you quite rightly point out, Sarah, these are learned skills. They're not innate.
Let me jump in again there, please. What I was trying to say, and I kind of went all around the houses and didn't quite get there, what I wanted to say about the fact that the people who, the 3%, if you will, having this business development bit, is that's the bit that is outside most people's comfort zones. Now, the reason that I mention that is that I have had coaches who are working on building their business have an uncomfortable experience. Maybe somebody said no, or they felt they didn't know the answer to some questions, or whatever the situation was, it was outside their comfort zone. And I have had people say to me on more than one occasion, if I was meant to do this, I wouldn't feel that uncomfortable. It wouldn't feel like this. Because they're busy doubting themselves, and you know, we all do it. You have something knocks you off your rails, and all of a sudden, every single mind monkey that's ever inhabited your brain turns from the tiny little cappuccino monkey that you've shrunk it to over the years into a massive silverback gorilla, roars enormously in your ears, and you go scuttling back into your burrow. The secret is, don't stay there. Get back out of your burrow, put that silverback gorilla back into his cappuccino monkey frame and carry on, because yes, it feels uncomfortable. If you want something that you haven't got and you've never done before, it has to exist outside your comfort zone, because your comfort zone's filled with things that you have done before, which is why they're comfortable. So providing you're not taking giant leaps outside that zone and you're taking small steps, but keep taking them, then that comfort zone will get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I've had coaches come back to me after 6, 8, 10 months and say, do you remember the fuss that I made when I first started doing this kind of business development stuff? I kicked and screamed and swore there had to be a better way. Brackets, prime candidate for the just one thing gurus. But it just becomes part of what you do. And it doesn't have to be horrid, pushy, psst, wanna buy a watch, flashy, Del Boy, trotter, salespeople. You know, that's not how people buy these days. Once upon a time, you know, when we were kids it was, but not anymore. Selling, coaching, is about being an authority on what you do and a trusted advisor to the people that you coach. And that, my friends, is a skill you can learn.
Yeah, and isn't that encouraging? You know, if ever there's a message for any new coach to have, it's to understand these are skills that can be acquired. These are skills that can be developed. It's a pleasure, really. I don't want people to think that there has to be an innate talent in there to do coaching. It requires a development of a skill, a learned skill. As Sarah so quite eloquently put, we're not talking about the fact that you've got to be born to do this. It's something that you can learn that sets you apart. It's the mindset of learning that's the key.
That sets you apart from other coaches.
Yes.
Because the thing is that the skills necessary to coach, they're hugely important, obviously, if we're all coaches, massively important skill set. But it's a different skill set from the skills required to gain coaching clients. And that goes back to things that we've written on our blog posts and conversations that we've had where we've said there is the world of difference between coaching and the business of coaching. And what the coaching revolution does, what we do, what we spend our time doing, is helping people to bridge that gap. Because once you have a bridge between your skill sets, your coaching skill set and your sales and marketing skill sets, which is what we're talking about when we say business development, once you've got that bridge there, then you've cracked it.
Yeah.
You've got the skills you need to be able to develop a coaching business, and then it's up to you to go and do it.
Yeah.
But those skills are skills that can be taught, but you need to learn them from people who have done it, not from people who've read in a book how to do it.
That, you know what, that's the golden sentence for me. So much of this, if I've learned anything in these years as a coach, it's been to learn from people who have been there and done it. It's singularly the best way to develop yourself and your business. The textbook stuff is missing a dimension you can't get unless you engage with other people. And of course, as Sarah says, you've got to get out of your comfort zone. It's where the magic happens. But it's so much more effective when you're working with people who have been there and done it, without question.
Well, it just means you don't have to reinvent the wheel, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We've all made all of the cock-ups. We've all done it. We've said every stupid thing we could possibly say. We've been in all the situations. We've been there and we've done it. And that really is the revolution. You know, don't try and learn from a book. You don't need to. Don't get me wrong, books are great. Mm-hmm. But actually, at the end of the day, having a human being at the other end of the phone for you to be able to say, oh, this happened and it was dreadful, or oh, this has happened and it was wonderful. That is the bit that keeps you going when it gets tough.
Yep, I can't agree more. I'm trying to think of what I can add to that. Honestly, you summed it up brilliantly.
Well, I think that might be the conclusion of episode 2. Thanks for listening to us.
Speak again soon.
See you next time.
Bye.
That's all from the Coaching Revolution. See you next time.